Hello, everybody. Welcome to the No Breaking Podcast. Today, I'm joined by Paul Leggett, the art director for Vintage Motorsport magazine, but he's also a fine artist and an automotive illustrator. So, Paul, I mean, to get started, I mean, how did you sort of fall into the world of automotive? Did you have a passion for cars when you were growing up, or how did that all fit in for you?
Yeah, I grew up, you know, my generation grew up with the movie Grand Prix and Le Mans. So it's hard not to fall in love with motor racing. So I have to say it was always in the back of my mind to be either working in the music industry, since I'm so close to Los Angeles and Hollywood, or motorsports. And Long Beach Grand Prix was close by, and Riverside Raceway. So I kind of fell into that career direction.
And then, so how did the art thing come to play into all of that then? I mean, how did that sort of work out for you?
Mostly getting in trouble in grade school. I just had a strong passion to draw. And, you know, it was just part of my lifestyle. I grew up in Southern California with a swimming pool that I spent most summers sitting at the dining room table drawing. So it's just been a natural passion of mine.
And then, so how did that sort of follow through, like post-school? I mean, did you go to college to study art, or how did that sort of come into play?
Oh, yeah. Well, during high school, I was always interested in graphics and illustration, and worked on the high school yearbook. So it was just a natural progression when I went into college to pursue that. And while I was attending college, I worked at a small little design agency, and from there kind of networked my way up into an automotive magazine while I was still fresh out of college, a magazine called On Track, not around anymore, but it was a great publication in the 90s.
Yeah, and so what were you sort of doing then when you were on track then, back at the start of your career?
Well, not too many people know this term, but magazines were basically built by hand. So we did a lot of cut and paste and laying out the pages manually and sizing photos. So I was I initially started as the assistant art director. So I was the one who had to manually put everything together and size photos by hand and help get things shipped off to the printer. So things have changed since those days.
Yeah, I was going to ask sort of what sort of come through in those, I guess, 20 to 30 years as an art director. I mean, what sort of changed in that time? And I'm guessing you're probably not doing so much literal cut and pasting these days as you used to. Is that fair to say?
Yes. And it is pretty amazing. The computer age has really upped the game, you know, in many industries. But I'll just give you one example. There were times where we were on deadline for, say, the French Grand Prix, and I would have to meet an airplane at LAX and pick up raw film and either develop it myself or send it to a color lab. You know, go in the dark room and print off the, you know, the best pictures for the story. So, yeah, nowadays most journalists have a place at the track to upload photos and create galleries for you to download images from instantaneously. So, yeah, it's the modern era is pretty amazing from where I worked.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's real true now, right? I mean, you can obviously, from most modern cameras, you can Bluetooth to your phone and then go straight for your phone out to the magic of the cloud, right? And it's all floating around us without us being able to see it because of science.
Pretty much like Wonka vision.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive. So, I mean, which other outlets have you sort of worked at then over your time when you've coming through there in that period?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, in the conversation, I wanted to work in the music industry. I actually worked with the one of the producers of Kiss, the Knack, Jose Feliciano, and Gladys Knight doing promotional posters for some of his up-and-coming music acts. They never made it big, but as I said, that was one direction I was going in. But while I was working at OnTrack, they had a Christmas card and notebook side business, and they did a lot of illustrations for the notepads and notebooks. So that really got me started in my automotive career or automotive illustration career, and that's where I got the eye of Paul Fanner, the owner of Racer, and kind of worked my way working for him, and not just for his racing publications, but for his special projects divisions. And I've done logos for, say, Watkins Glen Raceway, California Speedway, a multitude of different tracks. In fact, I'm just finished a logo for the SCCA for their 2022 runoffs. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that weekend of events.
Oh yes, no. Yeah, definitely the SCCA. It's a wonderful little community, right? Of basically sort of small time attack. Maybe is that, or not really time attack, but sort of more precision driving, I guess, might be the best way to describe it. Think that's fair?
Well, it is. It's probably a little bit larger. SCCA, Sports Car Club of America, the proper name.
Yep.
It's pro divisions as well as amateur, but it's racing nationwide, from the pro ranks of Trans Am, all the way down to Formula V's at local racetracks.
Yeah, my friend Spencer, who partakes, is going to kick me now for not being able to spit it out in time. But it's good that I've got you here, Paul, to set me straight.
Well, I know a little bit about it because way back when I first started working with Paul Fanner, I was the art director of Sports Car, which was the monthly magazine for the SCCA. It's one of the oldest automotive publications in America. They're actually still being published by Paul Fanner to this day.
Yeah. And then, what can you talk about how sort of you compose a logo? I mean, how does it come together? Is there much interaction with the client as to what they're looking for? Is it sort of you thinking out of the box, or how does that sort of come together? I mean, how do you sort of collaborate with anyone when you're working on a project of sorts?
Well, you have to admit that there is a set language for a logo. You want it to be legible, small. You work within, a visual language that, it's not too outside of the box. So what I want to say is you start conservative. And yes, it does start with, discussions with the client. Just taking this SCCA runoffs logo, for example, they are racing the event at VIR this year. And next year, they have a two-year contract. They wanted to make sure that VIR got recognized on the logo. So I had a few marks that I needed or that I was required to have on it, which was to somewhere have 2022, the year, VIR, the track, and of course, the main verbiage, runoffs. So you're just going to play around with sizing and get that visual language down, and that's pretty much it. I always tell my wife I would probably be a horrible art teacher because I'm very bad at explaining things. I just naturally know how to put these things together.
Yeah. So talking about that, I mean, when you say you naturally know how to put these things together, I mean, when someone gives you more of a blank canvas, so to speak, with a concept as opposed to like one of these special projects, I mean, where have you sort of come up with your ideas? Where do they sort of come from? Do they just sort of fall to you when you're in the midst of something, or is it you like setting time aside, or do you brainstorm ideas? I mean, sort of how does it sort of work for you? What's your creative process in that regard?
You know what? Where some people have photographic memory to a page in a favorite page in a book. I visually just catalog everything that I see when I'm walking around or see on television, and just kind of, you know, store the things that stick out to me that, you know, really spark my interest design-wise, that are cutting edge or moving in a new direction that I never thought of before. So when I'm designing something, I just kind of pull from things that I've seen in my, you know, daily world.
And then sort of how has that come to work with some of those special projects that you mentioned you've been a part of?
Well, they're very helpful. There was, to give you one example, 24 Hours of Daytona was raced under, I believe, under SCCA, but they had a division called USSRC, which was the sanctioning body that Can-Am raced under back in the 60s and 70s. And as I mentioned earlier, Paul Fanner, and being the art director of sports car at the time, he'll come to me with these last minute projects. Oh, can you do this real quick? The SCCA is going to run the 24 Hours of Daytona under the USSRC sanctioning body banner again. I need a quick logo. So instead of taking lunch, I would sit in front of my computer and, you know, design six or seven logos just off the top of my head. You know, like I said, just kind of grabbing from visuals that I've currently seen in design and throw them on Paul Fanner's desk, and he sends them off to the SCCA, and they choose one and they like it. And little did I know, you know, a few months later, GM Curry Moretti, I can't pronounce his name properly. Anyway, driving a Ferrari 333 wins the Daytona 24 Hours, and my logo's on his car. And it just sends chills down my back, knowing that it, you know, took me a lunchtime to design that logo.
Yeah, I've got to say, that must be pretty cool. Is there, some of the more surprising places where you've sort of found your artwork wind up after you've sort of finished it?
One, I would have to say, I updated with the help of the president at the time, Nick Roth. I redesigned or updated the SCCA Pro Racing logo. And that was probably over a decade ago. And that sticker is pretty much on every Pro Racing car that drives under the SCCA banner, say World Challenge or Trans Am. So when I'm walking around a place like Laguna Seca or Long Beach, and I see that logo amongst all the other decals on the car, it's so iconic, and I sometimes forget I do it, and then when I realize I did, it just blows my mind. It's hard to believe. Kind of a
dream. Yeah, I mean, that is really cool to think of that, like all those cars with your something that you've designed on there. I mean, that's really cool. And also, I know you do a lot of work with Toyota as part of the special projects. I was hoping you might sort of be able to talk about your work on that, if that's okay.
Yeah, again, there was a short amount of time I worked away from Racer Publications, and I was working at eSport Magazine. But I still had my relationship with all the people over there and their special projects division with that was headed up by Molly Binks and Lawrence Foster. And of all things, they came to me, I guess it was 4 years ago. This was a fun project. Came to me 4 years ago and asked me if I'd like to design a pinball machine for the launch of the new Supra. And of course I said yes, before realizing what the deadline was gonna be. The deadline actually ended up being 4 days. And somehow within 4 days, I designed the graphics for a pinball machine. And it kind of actually was one of the most challenging projects I'd ever completed. And it actually led me on to doing more pinball projects that I currently do today. So after you know, like I said, 4 years ago, I did that, and I've probably done 16 different machines now for Adidas and Champion Sportswear, and even a major motion picture that was released just the last couple of months, Licorice Pizza.
Yeah, I mean, pinball obviously is close to my heart, but what sort of goes into, I mean, there must be, I'm guessing, sort of a rationale, same way as you described about a logo. I mean, how a pinball table is set to look, and then you can sort of, I guess, bring in characteristics of what you need, right? I'm guessing for every sort of aspect of it, is that something that might make sense to my mind?
Yeah, you know, I didn't want to panic at first, you know, realizing I only had 4 days to do it. So not being very familiar with how the graphics went together, I pretty much spent the first 2 days making the stencils for the back glass and the outside cabinets and the playing surface. And so as I measured and traced out and created the vector art for all these surfaces, in the back of my head, I kind of imagined what I needed to accomplish graphics-wise. It was very helpful, too, because Toyota has a very simple color palette of red, black, and a dark gray tone and white. So I think it was to my advantage that I had such a set color palette. And so I spent the last 2 days just, you know, making it very Toyota branded. And at the same time, I actually illustrated the car front, back, top, and three-quarter view. And just everything just kind of magically went together. I didn't panic, and 4 days later, it was done.
And then some of the other pinball machines that you've worked on later, I mean, what have you found any enjoyment where you've been able to sort of being given like unique sort of like, say, the motion picture where did they let's say, look, go at it. You've got to make any amount of these pinball machines. It's up to you to make, or did they give you some sort of criteria as to what they're looking for? Or how did that sort of play out?
Well, that was an interesting one because, you know, the other ones, like for Champion Sportswear, the clothing line, that one I kind of had a little bit of freedom, and I actually just went to their website and looked again at the company's visual language, and I just kind of went to town on my own, and they liked what I created right off the bat. But in the case of the movie Licorice Pizza, they had already had the artwork set in place for the movie poster and the logo, Licorice Pizza, for the movie itself. So I actually, more of that machine, and there was actually six different ones, I actually just managed the project and made sure that the illustrator's graphics just fit into my stencils that I created for all the machines, and just made sure all the colors matched properly. So that was more kind of an art director, more managing the project. So I didn't really.
Okay.
What's interesting though, I don't have the award near me, so I don't know the official award for it. But that I actually won an award through a pinball society for the work I did on the Licorice Pizza machines, and I kind of feel. You know, I kind of feel bad that I won this award because there's so many other people that worked on the project with me. But I'll try to share it as much as I can with the other people that I work with.
I was going to ask, does this mean you're going to cut it up into little pieces and send pieces out to everyone? Is that how it's going to work?
Hey, you know what? I may just give it to the owner, Evan, who owns Orange County Pinball here in Fullerton, who I actually do all the work through. He's a really great guy to work with.
And then I also wanted to touch on sort of your freelance work that you do. I mean, how does that sort of, come together? Is that where clients reach out to you, or do you just sort of create art and then it's sort of you able to, there's enough of a community that supports you where they can sort of take on these projects that you do?
Well, I guess I'd have to say it comes to me through relationships that I've developed over the years. As I mentioned earlier, I've been doing this since 1990 and have developed many relationships and worked with many different people who've moved on to different publications or agencies. And so it's just nice to know those people are looking out for me when they need something done. Some examples of that, Alan Muir, he was the art director for Racer for quite a few years back in 2001, I believe, through 2010. He moved on to Motor Trend, and he still does. He periodically feeds me monthly work to do illustrations of the new cars that they're reviewing. So I do work with Motor Trend, and the same thing with Richard Barron. He was the art director at Road and Track. We've been friends for, I guess, over 20 years now. And he's over at Porsche Panorama. So he just feeds me work. So I guess the answer to your question is it's mainly through relationships that I've developed throughout my career.
Sure. And then, I mean, what sort of tools do you use these days now when you're working on your art? I mean, obviously, I'm guessing it's changed throughout the time, but you still rely on some of the tools that you use when you first sort of like still doing the drawing and doing the illustrations and the fine art and to up to the stuff that you're working on the computer. I mean, what sort of hardware software are you using as well? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I guess the industry standards right now would be the Adobe suite of InDesign, Photoshop, and Illustrator. Obviously, I do all my logos and car illustrations. If I'm not doing it by hand, I'm doing my car illustrations in Adobe Illustrator. And if I'm doing something, say, illustration on paper, I may start with a Photoshop file just to try to bend and tweak what I want the subject to look like, and then I use those as notes to draw from. There's one that I haven't really played with, but my son really loves, is Procreate. So that's, if there's a software on the horizon that I might start using more of, it's Procreate. Because the stuff that he's producing, he's 19 years old, and he's doing some outstanding work with it. And when he started using it, he was probably 8 years old.
Okay.
Quite a veteran in that school, and he can actually teach his old dad how to do a new trick or two. So those
and
are
then,
standards.
Yeah, and then what about, I mean, do you have like a tablet that you utilize as well, or is it just mostly, I mean, does that sort of play into it as well?
You know, I try the tablet at first, but, you know, being of the old guard, I still do a lot of my illustration just using my mouse and just, you know, scooting my mouse across my mouse pad. It kind of drives me crazy a little bit, but that I just have a very natural feel to it. I just can't let go of it.
And then are you still like hiding Easter eggs in the art that you do?
Oh, of course. Of course. I started doing that back when I first started working with for Racer magazine in the late 90s. We did a section of, we had a monthly feature where we shot a famous race car in the studio. And there was always a page that had a very high resolution image of the cockpit. And I would do a real tight illustration of all the knobs and gear shifters and levers. And it was a lot of monotonous line work. So you can always find the little happy face hidden in a button or a steering wheel or a shift knob. And I don't do those illustrations anymore, but today I still hide things. In fact, I'll give one away. Last year, the Racer cover with the Indy Pagoda, I hid a squirrel in one of the windows, paying homage to all the squirrels I have as friends in my backyard here.
And is there anyone that's ever been surprised, or do you ever let them know post that there is an Easter egg in there for them to look for, or you just leave it up to anyone who's willing to just try and find it themselves?
I let a few people know that I've thrown them in there. Some of them I even forgot about. So it depends. And sometimes people even ask me to put something in there.
And then if
I
I was
was a
going,
Lawrence
sorry,
Foster,
Paul.
the chief editor at Racer. One time I had to do an illustration of what a champ car was going to look like in the future. And after he approved the image, he said, could you hide a black flag logo in there? So there's a black flag logo hidden in there.
I was going to say, black, I'm assuming you're going to be talking about Black Flag, the punk band, right?
Yeah, a local favorite to me here in Portland.
Oh, hey, look, if you can get away with it, Paul, I say why not, right?
Sure, yeah.
And then I also wanted to ask, I mean, if you had any tips, thoughts, or suggestions, I guess, for artists that are sort of still in that time of whether in school or looking to get out of school. I mean, what advice would you give someone if they're trying to sort of look to try and make a move into the automotive space with their work of their portfolio?
Man, just be patient and build relationships and be realistic and realize that right out of the box, sending off a portfolio or samples of your art, it's not going to land you your first job because as an art director of an automotive magazine, and I've been doing this since 1990, that's my main source of income. I get a lot of mail from graduates, and a lot of them don't realize that they're wanting to do exactly what I want to do. And like I said, I'm the art director full time, and I do illustration in my spare time. And all I can say is be patient, network, build relationships, and there's a lot of places you can find employment. Just keep searching and you'll find one. I mean, nowadays racing teams have in-house art departments and racetracks have them as well. So there's a multitude of outlets. You just got to find the one that works for you.
And then I was going to ask about what projects you have on particular on the horizon for 2022. I mean, I think it's important that we speak about the one that you're going to be doing partnering with Kuruma on, which is the NFTs project, right?
That's a pretty exciting little venture that we're going to get going there. One of the reasons why I'm excited about it is my wife and I, when we can afford it, we purchase art when we can. Our walls of our living room and dining room are filled with art of different street artists and local artists that we love here in Southern California. And following them on Facebook and Instagram, I noticed that they were getting into this NFT thing, and I didn't really understand it at first. And so, I looked into it, and next thing you know, I'm being invited to participate in this project. So I'm getting my own NFTs off the ground, and yeah, that's pretty exciting. We're going to start with 12 of the Racer covers that I've illustrated over the years, and manipulate them into four different formats where you can have the art by itself, the art as it's shown as the full cover of the magazine with all the verbiage, and then a variant with the artwork and the Racer logo, and then there's the fourth one I can't remember, but we're making them available in a multitude of variants so people can collect whatever they wish to collect.
Yeah, I mean, do you think that's like the maybe the way forward where art might go to in the digital space and the metaverse, as we're calling it these days?
Yeah, it's one of those inevitabilities. there's a, and it's one of those things that it just, it takes on a life of its own. As I mentioned, my wife and I, we have our favorite artists. I have one in particular, Kent Williams. You can Google him, or your listeners can Google him. I just love his work. He is a fine artist as well as a comic book artist. Outstanding work. And one of the local conventions, I was able to sit down and talk to him prior to this NFT thing. It was probably 2-3 years ago. And I was really excited because I was able to buy one of his rough pencil sketches that he based one of his paintings on. And I was really excited about it. And I mentioned to him, I said, you know, I'm not a person that buys prints. I don't understand prints. It's not original art. I know it's signed by you, but it's not original. I'm a guy who needs to, you know, because I'm an artist myself, I treasure original art. And so we had a discussion about prints. And he mentioned that the pencil sketch that I bought, you know, it's an original. It's a rough, but it's an original. And he said, yes, this is more valuable than any print I've ever done. And we both kind of laughed about it. And I reflect on that conversation a lot because I know he's probably having some struggles with NFTs as well as I did originally. But the more that I explore and read about NFTs as investments, yes, it's a natural progression for the art world to evolve and get into this new medium, which will eventually be, you know, the norm or part of the norm.
And then I guess that's obviously all happening at Karuma.com, which will be launching, and then everyone will have to buy their digital currency, right, to make the purchases through that, I'm guessing. I think it's Solana is the currency of choice.
Yeah, I believe so, yeah.
Oh, but it's a very exciting space to see where it's going to go, and it sort of opens up more opportunity for, as we just talked about, people wanting to get into the art world, and it gives them another outlet, I guess, to sort of see where they can take their creativity.
Sure. And what's exciting for me is you mentioned one of your earlier questions was, you know, the softwares that I use. You know, some of the softwares I was using back in the 90s, one of them was a program called Aldus Freehand, and it's no longer supported today. I actually have an older Mac in my garage that runs on an old system and a stack of CDs that's filled with all this freehand illustrations that I couldn't open anywhere else except for that old computer. And I convert them to EPSs and put them on a little jump drive and try to open them now in, you know, current Illustrator softwares. And so I have years of CDs just archived that I can explore some of these old illustrations and turn into NFTs for everyone to enjoy. And exciting for me, I can make a little money from it.
Hey, if we can make a little bit of pocket money, why not, right?
Yeah.
And then, Paul, if someone's want to try and find you and your work, where's the best place to track you down online?
I suppose I've been real busy with my work of late, but I do have an Instagram account. It's called PLAGDoodles. Just simply my first initial, P-L-A-G, and then the word doodles, PLAGDoodles.
Perfect. And then what about for with your actual commercial work? I mean, where's the best place to sort of find you there?
You can probably just Google my name, Paul Leggett, and my there's an online portfolio that I have through a website called Coroflot. And that'll come up if you Google my name, Paul Leggett.
Perfect. Well, Paul, it's been an absolute fantastic time talking to you today, and I really appreciate the time you've given me here.
Yeah, this was enjoyable, and I hope any of your younger listeners who are eager to get into this market, like I said, just if this is your passion, just, you know, just keep working at it. Just you can have some frustrating times, but, you know, in the end, it'll be worthwhile.
Look, I couldn't agree more. And with that, Paul, I'd just like to say thank you so much. And as always, I'd like to thank my listeners. If you've got any questions for me, you can always reach me at nobreaking.com or on Instagram at nobreaking. Also, as I like to tell everyone, if you'd like friends, please tell them to like, share, subscribe, anything to do with that. It always really helps with the algorithm that we always are akin to now. But anyway, thank you as always, guys, for listening. We'll just see you next time. Bye-bye.